This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Hi, this is Valerie Goldston. Today I'll be reading to you from Reader's Digest. The RD List. Read, watch, listen. Film. My Penguin Friend. Starring Jean Reno. An irresistible and altogether adorable true tale about a most unlikely bond. Lonely Brazilian fisherman. Joel Pierre de Souza, Jean Reno, is grappling with tragedy when he spots an oil-drenched penguin in the surf. He rescues the Antarctican, providing baths, shelter, food, and a name, Dindim. His wife, Adriana Barraza, doesn't quite understand all the TLC, everything is for the penguin. But Dindim reignites D'Souza's sense of purpose. The relationship has a touching effect on Dindim, too. The plucky bird returns to the ocean for winters, but uses his unbelievable GPS abilities to travel 5,000 miles back to his makeshift family every year. In demonstrating how a loving home is universal, there's no surprise that this adventure has riveted the world and earned the big screen treatment along the way. Film. The Supremes at Earl's All You Can Eat. Starring Anjanue Ellis-Taylor, Sanan Lathan, and Uzo Aduba. No, we're not referring to the Motown legends. But this drama, which follows three best pals who meet and eat at the titular restaurant, hits plenty of big notes. Our girl group, nicknamed the Supremes, have been inseparable since childhood. As adults, they support each other through ups, downs, and arounds. Odette, Anjanue Ellis-Taylor, learns her hot flashes are cancer symptoms. Clarice, Uzo Aduba, can't decide if she should leave her charming cad of a husband, Russell Hornsby. And Barbara Jean, Sanal Latham, turns to alcohol to cope with loss. They dish hard truths and hold court in their favorite booth at Earl's. The film, based on Edward Kelsey Moore's 2013 novel, poignantly depicts the power of meaningful friendship. TV. Pachinko, starring Yang Yu-Yen. A gripping family epic spanning four generations and half the globe, from colonized 1920s Korea to booming 1980s Japan and New York, returns. Sanja, Yang Yu-Yen, a Korean mother in Japan during World War II, must contend with hard decisions like leaving home and the wealthy Korean man she thought she loved for somewhere with scarcely better treatment. Color-coded subtitles identify languages spoken, English, Korean, and Japanese. Books. The Life Impossible by Matt Haig. Literary hitmaker Matt Haig, The Midnight Library, hits the mark once again with The Life Impossible. A letter from a former student prompts retired math teacher Grace Winters to recount the seemingly innocuous act of kindness she extended to a music teacher decades earlier. The good deed, nearly forgotten, evolves into something unforgettable when Winters is bequeathed a house in Ibiza. As she books a one-way ticket to learn more about her old co-worker's life and death, readers learn more about the baggage Winters tows and can't seem to unpack. The Bookshop by Evan Fries. The Bookshop begins, as so many things in U.S. history do, with Benjamin Franklin. Each chapter in Edward Friss's account is set in a legendary bookshop, from Franklin's Philadelphia printing house to New York City's iconic Strand, to the towering ceilings of Barnes & Noble stores and everywhere in between and beyond. More than glance back at a history of the American bookstore, as the book's subtitle touts, Freese optimistically turns a page to Bookshop's future. Chapters are chronological, but peruse as you would in person. Browse first and see what piques your interest most. Caroline Fanning. Our next column, Health, by Rosemary Counter. I admit it, when it comes to food, I have some ew-inducing practices, like skimming mold off old cheddar and feeding the rest to my unsuspecting family. We're still alive, but how bad can it be? Because our gross human habits fall somewhere along the spectrum from mildly cringeworthy to full-on repulsive, I reached out to experts to find where some common behaviors land on the grossometer. Eating old food, the stamped expiration date and its confusing cousins, use by and best before, should be but one tool in your, should I eat this toolbox? With the exception of infant formula, food labels aren't standardized or regulated, says nutritionist Marie Spiker, an assistant professor at the University of Washington. Few are related to biology or food safety, just peak freshness. And so she says it's totally fine and safe to eat foods that are not at their exact peak. Handling, packaging, refrigeration, and storage all affect any food's farm-to-plate timeline, so your best tools are your eyes and nose. Most of the time, this is intuitive, says Spiker. If it looks good and smells good, it's probably good. Not sure? Consider this. Spores spread through soft, porous surfaces. So, in general, hard foods are more difficult to permeate and therefore safer to eat, she says. Don't trust your sense of smell or sight? Check out the FDA's website where food safety guidelines are available. So, you probably should toss the whole package if you spot mold on bread, soft cheeses like brie and feta, or soft produce such as strawberries. But it's not too gross to slice off the funky stuff and save the rest of potatoes, cured meat like salami, or hard cheeses like my beloved cheddar. Borrowing a toothbrush. Most of us would never use a stranger's toothbrush for two good reasons. One, we have no idea what illness or germs that person harbors. And two, it's disgusting. But that's surely not the same as borrowing your partner's in a pinch, right? After all, we swap kisses. Well, your mouth is not a sterile place, and it's full of bacteria unique to you, says Matthew Cassina, DDS, clinical director at Ohio State Upper Arlington Dentistry in Columbus. The whole reason we brush and floss is to collect and remove live bacteria. Often it's from spots that lips don't touch. A cold, the flu, or even herpes can be easily passed along on a toothbrush, especially if you have gingivitis or bloody gums. Using your partner's toothbrush means you're transferring their germs into your mouth, which can disrupt your own mouth's delicate bacteria balance. Of course, if you've lived with someone long enough, chances are that your family group already shares some bacterial commonality, says Messina. But it's best to play it safe. If you find yourself on vacation without a toothbrush, just gargle with mouthwash or water. And he adds, when you're traveling, remember, unless you're on safari, toothbrushes are readily available. Just call the front desk. Kissing your dog. Pet owners are shameless when it comes to showering their fur babies with affection. A recent survey revealed that 61% of dog owners admit to kissing their dogs on the mouth. All this despite the possibility of zoonotic animal-to-human diseases, including Pasteurella, which can result in skin inflammation and joint infections, salmonella, stomach cramps, fever, and E. coli, diarrhea, bloodstream infections. That said, the risk of spot passing you a parasite or anything else is very low, except when it isn't. If you're young, old, pregnant, or immunocompromised, if you have bad acne or psoriasis or an easily infected open wound, I'd avoid being licked on the face, advises veterinarian Scott Weiss, chief of infection control at Ontario Veterinary College. Even the healthy should pick their pecks wisely. Keep this in mind before planting a wet one on your dog. Everything they've licked, everything, may up inside you. That said, there's a cost-benefit analysis to be made, says Weiss. For lots of people, kissing is a part of bonding with their pet. If that's you and the risk is worth it, that's fine. Sipping from unwashed water bottles. It's highly likely that buried in a gym bag or forgotten in the car trunk is a reusable water bottle that's been rinsed, rarely and barely, but never properly scrubbed. So what? It's just water, right? Wrong. It's a bunch of other things now, too. The inside of your bottle is like a dirty aquarium. It's covered in biofilms, clusters of viable microorganisms growing from your mouth's backwashed flora, explains Peter C. Iwin, professor at the University of Nebraska's Department of Pathology, Microbiology, and Immunology. A small consolation. Your own flora won't necessarily hurt you. What can hurt you, however, is any foreign bacteria. Maybe you use a dirty barbell, wipe sweat off your lips, then take a drink. That can sneak into the bottle and multiply. A water bottle sitting a few hours in a warm car makes a nice petri dish for bacteria to thrive. And in just water, there are plenty of nutrients from your backwashed saliva for slimy biofilm to feast upon. A simple wash doesn't clean this out. That's because your bottle has a ton of microscopic crevices for bacteria to hide and grow into mold, which can cause diarrhea, vomiting, or allergy symptoms. Porous plastic bottles are the most hospitable to bacteria, so opt for glass or stainless steel instead. But whatever you're drinking from, try to wash it every few days with dish soap, or better yet, one part vinegar and three parts water. Skipping the soap. Most of us tend to be fastidious when washing our hands in a public restroom. But at home, why bother with all that scrubbing? After all, the germs in your bathroom more likely belong to you anyway. And you're right, to a point. Your immune system is trained to recognize your own microbes and get rid of the rest, says Shannon Manning, associate professor of microbiology and molecular genetics at Michigan State University. But consider that a flush toilet, when left open, expels invisible particles into the air at more than 6 feet per second. Just assume you're going to get covered in some of that spray. If you pick up a pathogen, an organism causing disease, on your hands, and then, say, bite your nails or eat a sandwich, you can ingest the pathogen, says Manning. And should that happen and you get sick, even microbes you already harbor can balloon if your immune system is busy fighting something else. Hence the necessity of a good wash, preferably with antimicrobial soap. A simple splash of water is not only insufficient, but might be worse than not washing at all, says Manning, since foreign germs are more likely to stick to wet hands. Tinkling in the shower. relief for secret shower tinklers. Peeing while you're in there is actually pretty natural. Warm running water from the shower stimulates the bladder to want to contract, says Lori Lerner, associate professor and chief of urology at Boston University's Cohobian and Avedisian School of Medicine. A sudden spasm can force urine from the bladder, and luckily there's no need to fight the inevitable. In most cases, urine is sterile. It's just electrolytes from your own body, and it's going right down the drain, Lerner says. But what if you're swimming in a public pool? Okay, yes. Other people's pee is a pretty gag-worthy thought, though again, not quite as bad as it sounds. Urine in a pool is very, very diluted with tons of chlorine for this exact reason, says Dr. Lerner. Human bodies are leaky, and while technically any bodily fluid could contain disease-causing bacteria, if the risk of pool pee were anything but minuscule, you'd read about thousands upon thousands of infections daily. Far worse than the chemical-treated pools, adds Dr. Lerner, is a lake filled with fish waste and bacteria. But thanks to nice scenery and nature's good PR, nobody really frets about that. Pimple popping. Are you hooked on popping zits? Come on, we're all friends here. After all, whether you're doing it out of boredom or vanity, or for the dopamine hit, gross but true, your brain rewards this bad habit with a flood of happy hormones, you're not alone. The proof, the TV show Dr. Pimple Popper, and endless TikTok videos. But before your face ends up resembling an exploded minefield, Idaho-based board-certified dermatologist Dustin Portella wants you to remember this. A popped pimple is basically an open wound where bacteria can sneak in and cause a highly contagious skin infection like impetigo, or a yeast-based fungus like candida. Dr. Portella has seen popped pimples snowball into painful infected abscesses, requiring antibiotics and surgical drainage. But good news, the likelihood of this is low. So, if you can't keep your fingers off your face, Dr. Portella suggests you scrub up like a surgeon. It takes 2 to 5 minutes to carefully scrub the hands and forearms with an antimicrobial soap, according to the National Institute for Health. Even then, Dr. Portella warns, infections still happen. That's why he suggests you don a pair of latex gloves, and as soon as you're done, apply a medicated pimple patch to help the picked-at lesion heal more quickly and to keep you from digging at it some more. Because the more you pick, the more likely you'll scar. Next up, your true stories. Won't you be our neighbor? These folks do Mr. Rogers proud. By Reader's Digest Readers. Cold treats, warm hearts. I wondered who our neighbors would be when we bought land for our new house. I didn't have to wonder long. On a hot day, a beautiful and pregnant woman walked across the field with popsicles for us. Rochelle and I were both expecting our fourth daughters, and all our girls lined up within a year of one another. Our family spent the next 22 years making memories between our homes. They had to move out for a year about a decade ago while their house was rebuilt after a fire. They moved back in on Christmas Eve, but the kitchen wasn't done. So I suggested they come over on Christmas for a big breakfast in our pajamas. Now every year we go back and forth. Who knew a few popsicles would have such an impact? Conda Corey, Warsaw, Indiana. Forgive thy neighbor. On Sunday afternoons, my neighbor, Dick, and I often mowed our lawns. Most people wouldn't give it a second thought, but we were both pastors who encouraged our parishioners to make Sunday a day of rest. On such occasions, we'd meet at the fence, confess our sins, assure each other of divine forgiveness, then finish the job. Paul Bailey, Fayetteville, New York. Keeping it in the family. My sister Lynn and I were close growing up, but our lives took different directions after high school. Decades later, she was divorcing and needing a place to live. I'd been thinking of buying the home across the street as an investment, and the owner agreed to sell it to me at a discounted neighbor rate. My sister moved in the day I closed, happy to be in town with her grandkids. Now she and I are closer than ever, exactly 100 feet door to door. Christine Cowan, Charlotte, North Carolina. A good place to plant roots. When I moved into my new house, I noticed the woman next door working long hours in her garden. A few weeks later, Claudia knocked on my door, reluctantly informing me that our puppy had crawled through the fence and dug up every vegetable she'd planted, 4 times. I apologized profusely and built a better fence, but I also helped replant every vegetable right alongside her and helped with weeding all summer. Not only did Claudia teach me about gardening and share the harvest, we also bonded during those sessions and have been inseparable since. She taught me to knit so I could make ski sweaters for my kids, and we organized my parents' 40th anniversary party together. I even wriggled through her doggy door when she locked herself out. I can't imagine a better friend or neighbor. Lisa Lambert, Denver, Colorado. Living in Harmon, E. When I was 4, my parents bought a farm. Not many would treat new neighbors with a bunch of rambunctious kids as family, but Harmon and Wilma, the people who lived in the log cabin next door, did. Wilma regaled us with tales of her days as an outdoors woman. Harmon took us on rides on his donkey cart and brought us treats for every birthday and holiday. When our parents went out, their instructions were, "Call Harmon if you need anything." In an account of his life, Harmon wrote, "When the Reichlands bought the farm, we added a new family to ours. Katie Du Loello, Crestline, Ohio." A cookie lady. When I was a kid, my neighbor worked for the Keebler Company. Their spare room was packed with more cookies than they could ever eat. His wife, aptly nicknamed the Cookie Lady, loved the neighborhood kids and often passed out cookies from their stash. My mom told me it was rude to knock on her door asking for some, but Mrs. Millie assured my mom that it made her happy when we came knocking. Jane Gibson, Allentown, Pennsylvania. Codename BFFs. My neighbor Ann and I liked taking walks through the woods or to the bakery for a cookie. We enjoyed our girl time and didn't want our husbands crashing. When she was ready to head out, she'd signal by pulling down a bedroom window shade. Taking my cue, I'd call the house and tell her husband that I needed to borrow her for a bit. He felt good about helping a neighbor and never asked to tag along. Sandy Schneider, Trumbull, Connecticut. Nurture the hearth. When my husband entered hospice, we set up his bed next to our wood-burning stove. That day, I heard my neighbor Jim chopping wood outside, and next thing I knew, he was bringing it inside by the armful. We had more than enough to keep my husband warm during his final days. During our decades as neighbors, we've done plenty of good things for each other, but this memory still brings tears to my eyes. Christy Roberts, Middletown, Ohio. A positive note. 8-year-old Micklin Lee's family moved into our mostly senior neighborhood 2 years ago. One morning, I found a handwritten note on my porch. It said I was beautiful, nice, cool, and awesome, and was signed Your Neighbor in orange crayon. It was the first of many notes and drawings that always brightened my day. My favorite was a note in green ink. Never forget, you light up my heart. I left notes and small gifts for her in return. Micklin Lee's family has since moved away, and I sure miss that thoughtful kid who taught me how to be a good neighbor. Glenda Ferguson, Paoli, Indiana. Ding Dong Switch. We felt like fish out of water when we moved to a new town in Minnesota, but my mom finally made friends with our neighbor, Betty. Our first Halloween there landed on a Sunday, which meant we had evening church services and had to skip trick-or-treating. Betty jumped into action. She called all our neighbors and told them the Drueger kids would be going door-to-door for candy on Saturday night, so be prepared. That's when I knew we had a very special neighbor. Mike Druber, Edgerton, Minnesota. Our next story, the famous designer Princess Diana wouldn't wear because of Camilla. Marissa Liberti. A fight on her honeymoon made Diana resent one iconic label. Princess Diana was known for being a humanitarian, a modern royal, and a doting, hands-on parent. But she also left a legacy on the fashion world, becoming one of the biggest style icons of her generation. Her looks ranged from understated suits to regal gowns, and, of course, who could forget her famous revenge dress? But there was one designer she steered clear of in the wake of her divorce from Prince Charles. Which high-end fashion brand did Diana refuse to wear? Chanel. Just 2 months after Charles and Diana's divorce was finalized in 1996, Diana made a trip to Australia. Before one charity event, designer Jason Brunson was called on to help her pick out accessories. Diana's hairdresser gave Brunson a pile of shoes and bags to rifle through, and he spotted a pair of Chanel heels that he thought would complement her Versace dress nicely. They were chic with bold gold logos, but they got an immediate no from Lady Di. She said, "No, I can't wear linked C's, the double C," Brunson told Harper's Bazaar. I asked why, and she said, "It's Camilla and Charles." The interlocking C's of the Chanel logo had given Diana a bad taste in her mouth since the earliest days of her marriage, when she already suspected her husband of having an affair with Camilla Parker Bowles. On our honeymoon, cufflinks arrived on Charles's wrists. Two C's intertwined like the Chanel C. Diana revealed during a secret interview in 1991. "So I said, 'Camilla gave you those, didn't she?' He said, 'Yes. So what's wrong?' 'They're a present from a friend.' And boy, did we have a row. Jealousy, total jealousy. And it was such a good idea, the two C's, but it wasn't that clever." So while Diana had sported Chanel bags and accessories before, those interlocking C's were too much when she was stinging from the recent end to her marriage. "It was definitely the timing, it being post-divorce," Brunson said. "She would have seen linked C's and they would have just reminded her of Charles and Camilla. And I think for photo optics, people would have honed in on that, considering it was so fresh after the divorce." Did Diana ever wear Chanel again? As time went on, the pain of the divorce faded. And 2 months before her death in 1997, Diana wore a Chanel bracelet and bag when visiting New York, just before auctioning off 79 dresses for charity. The auction brought in $3.25 million, proving how important she was to the fashion landscape.